It, King's masterpiece, hits the big screen. Well, half of it anyway, by Tyson Blue. Blue bio, with apologies to Linda Ronstadt. Tyson Blue, a true eminent grice in the world of horror criticism, has been writing and publishing reviews in the genre since the 1970s. He is considered an expert on the work of Stephen King and the various media projects related thereto, and has lectured extensively on the subject around the country. His The Unseen King was for years considered the definitive work on King's early and unpublished material. His work appeared in Cemetery Dance, Twilight Zone, 2 AM, and he was contributing editor for Castle Rock, the Stephen King newsletter, for most of its run in the late 80s. He has also written a number of short stories for various anthologies. He lives with his wife, Janice, near Rochester, New York, and practices law in his spare time. It, Stephen King's epic novel about a group of kids in a small city in Maine and their decades-spanning battle with a monstrous, child-devouring creature that lives in the sewers below, has always been one of my favorite of King's novels. Not so much for the monster stuff, although that's terrific. I loved it more for the segments dealing with the children's lives, the things they do when they're not chasing it. If you wanted to know what my childhood in the small New England mill town of Franklin, New Hampshire was like, read It. We ran around town playing guns, not army, not cowboys, but guns, and said things like, "Jeezum Crow," and drank Moxie, which figures more in 11-22-63 than it does in It, but hey, it's my review. More to the pertinent point, we played in a wooded area with streams running through it, dotted with large, cone-shaped wells that led down to the sewers that carried waste from the houses atop the hill to the east where we played before it was ultimately dumped into the waters of the Merrimack River, which formed the intersection of the Winnipesaukee and Pemigewasset Rivers right behind the high school, whence it headed on down into Massachusetts and, ultimately, the Atlantic. Those wells reminded me of nothing so much as the wells leading to the lair of the Morlocks in the 1959 version of The Time Machine, directed by the great George Pal. And decades later, when King described the wells which dotted the barrens and Derry, I knew exactly what they looked like. In other words, it was the kid stuff that made It one of my favorite King novels. And that's why I like Andy Muschietti's 2017 film It, Chapter 1, so much. It got the kid stuff right. The film used locations in Port Hope, Ontario, about an hour east of Toronto, to stand in for the fictional town of Derry, Maine, which is in itself a combination of Bangor and Stamford, Connecticut, mostly Bangor. Port Hope is completely convincing as a mid-sized New England city, aided in no small part by the inclusion of such Bangor references as the Paul Bunyan statue and the Thomas Hill standpipe, a Bangor landmark which figures prominently in the novel's climax. It remains to be seen whether or not it will play as important a role in the second film, shooting in Canada as this is being written. Having grown up in a small New England city, I can tell you that the atmosphere is perfectly recreated. Although the earliest portions of King's novel took place in 1957 and the contemporary part in 1984, the Chapter 1 film is set in 1988, with the second part presumably set in 2019, the year the film is tentatively set for release. This does not significantly affect the basic story. There are, unfortunately, still bullies and their victims. High schools are still home to winners and losers, popular kids, and everyone else. And so all that is really needed to make the transition is to change hairstyles, clothing, films on the theater marquee, and so forth. Cell phones were in their infancy at the time, having first been practically developed in 1983, and would not have been in wide use. In addition, although the internet as we know it was created in 1981, its use was very limited, and the modern internet would not come into being until 1995, so the novel's plot could transfer to the screen relatively intact without the vast changes these modern advances would have imposed on the film. The story focuses on the Losers Club, a group of seven youngsters drawn together by their ostracism from Derry Society, or rather, Derry School Society. And this ostracism takes place for many of the same reasons it does today, being poor, overweight, black, Jewish, gawky, nerdy, sickly, being a girl with a bad reputation, or just plain not fitting in. Muschietti has assembled a fantastic cast of young actors to portray the losers, and all of them do a spectacular job. Sophia Lillis turns in a breakout performance as Beverly Marsh, one of the greatest characters King has ever created. Lillis also appears in the HBO series Sharp Objects, playing the main character played by Amy Adams as a young person. Finn Wolfhard, fresh from his standout performance in the first two seasons of the Netflix series Stranger Things, which bears more than a passing resemblance to It, is great as Richie Tozier, the would-be wise guy comedian of the group. The rest of the ensemble are stellar as well. Jason Lieberer is Bill Denbrough, whose brother Georgie is killed in spectacular fashion by It at the film's iconic beginning, which closely resembles the novel. Jeremy Ray Taylor is Ben Hanscom, whose secret adoration for Beverly fuels much of the film's understory. Chosen Jacobs is Mike Hanlon, a young black man who is trying to fit into a town that hates him, particularly a gang led by the sociopathic Henry Bowers, Nicholas Hamilton. Jack Dylan Grazer is Eddie Kasprak, a boy whose asthma may be in large part psychosomatic and engineered by his bizarre mother, Sonia, played by Molly Jane Atkinson. Wyatt Olef is Stan Uris, a young Jewish boy seeking to please his rabbi father and dealing with his own refusal to believe in the supernatural things that are happening around him, including a particularly scary manifestation of it. In 1990, the novel was adapted as a two-part, four-hour TV movie, which featured Tim Curry as the title character in his guise as Pennywise the Clown, a performance which set a very high bar for anyone to try to replace Curry in anyone's mind in the role. Muschietti wisely chose to create his own unique take on the character. Bill Skarsgård, a member of the Swedish Skarsgård acting dynasty, is Pennywise. His it primarily manifests as a more Victorian-appearing clown who never really has a purely funny aspect. With his perpetual snaggle-toothed grin and steady, unblinking yellow eyes, his Pennywise is always sinister. When he appears, it is almost always suddenly, his head thrust forward, moving quickly until he is right in the face of one of the losers. This makes him a scary, dangerous presence, always threatening. And although we never see him in his true form, it is obvious from the start that it is a creature never before encountered, although he takes on the aspect of the things each of the losers fear most. For Eddie, a leper. For Mike, the victims of the fire at the Black Spot, a segregated nightclub burned down by bigots in the town's past. For Stan, it is the eerie, twisted flautist in a painting hanging in his father's office at the temple. Ben sees it as a headless boy killed in an explosion at the Derry Ironworks, whose head ended up in the branches of a tree, as shown in an illustrated history of the town he finds in the library. Only Beverly sees its true form, its deadlights, near the film's climax. But for much of the film, she has to deal with her father, whose interest in her may be more than normal paternal concern. Its minions are a teen gang led by the aforementioned Henry Bowers, a mullet-wearing psychopath whose sadistic crimes may be a way of acting out his hatred of his brutal police officer father. He even scares his three cohorts, as shown by their reaction when, early in the film, he pulls a knife and starts to carve his name in Ben Hanscom's belly, casing Ben to break free and flee into the Barrens, which actually leads to the formation of the Losers Club. As the losers coalesce, they piece together what they have seen and begin to get a picture of the cycle of child death that has plagued Derry since its creation. They also intuit the way the adults in the town turn a blind eye to the situation and realize that anything that gets done about it will have to be done by them. Another classic scene from the novel is the apocalyptic rock fight, in which the losers fend off an attack by Bowers and his gang on Mike Hanlon by pelting the four with rocks until they flee, with Bowers vowing revenge. One major change the film makes is moving the entrance to its realm from the sewers to the house on Niebolt Street, home to the leper seen by Eddie. The losers descend into the well on a rope in search of Beverly, who was taken by the creature after it had temporarily caused the group to fracture. They are reunited in their desire to rescue Beverly. While they are separated, it is able to fight them off. Bill is led astray by an image of his dead brother, Georgie. Mike is attacked and injured by Bowers, who has tracked him down after murdering his father with a knife. Stan is attacked by it, whose huge, tooth-bedizened mouth battens on him and threatens to eat him. It is only when the losers all reunite and awaken Beverly that they can successfully take on it, wounding it and driving it down the well, at least severely injured and hopefully dead. The film has a long, gentler denouement, where they all gather a few weeks after the confrontation underground, at which time, their memories of the events already beginning to fade, they all swear a blood oath to return if the killings ever begin again and to finish it once and for all, or die trying. And, since most of us have read the novel, we know that 27 years later, it does in fact come back, and the adult losers, minus one, will find themselves drawn back to Derry to face the monster one last time. And if you're one of those whiners who don't like spoilers, I don't coddle you people. You should have known that, so go away. But we'll all have to wait until at least September 6th, 2019, to find out how it comes out in the cinematic world. For now, though, we have It, Chapter 1, as it is revealed to be titled at the end, and a most enjoyable film it is, scary and exciting and poignant and affecting all at the same time. And, as in the novel, I like the kid stuff the best, and in this one, the kid stuff is done amazingly well. This one's for my pal, Harlan Ellison. I miss you, kiddo.